go ahead and get started now. So, we made it to Faith Walkers, or Faith Camp, sorry. Faith Walkers forever. So great to be here. Steve, thanks for coming. This is awesome. So inspired by Steve's leading us in music this morning. That was so encouraging. And I loved John Meyer's talk last night about our identity in Christ and finding that fulfillment in Him. I just felt like he outlined that so well. And today, so my name is Bob Davis. I'm going to be talking about God's call to alleviate poverty through discipleship. So nice long title. I'd love engagement and activity, so as I ask questions, feel free to call out answers and try to get you to talk amongst each other too as we discuss some of these challenges. So this is a picture of my wife and I and our friend Udupe. So my wife is Danielle. She's here. She's amazing. She's helped me put this together. So a lot of the credit goes to her. And we just got back from traveling the world. So we spent 7 months traveling all around the world. We went to Europe, Asia, Africa, and went to 19 different countries. It was really incredible. So we got to experience some of the challenges of poverty firsthand. And we'll be talking about some of those things today. But I wanted to start off by sharing a story of this man here in the center. His name is Trinity. And he's someone that we met in Kenya. But he grew up in Uganda. So if you just maybe imagine with me for a minute what it might be like to grow up in the slums of Uganda. So you can imagine all the tin roofs, you know, dirt roads, you know, urine running down the side of the street, you know, kids going all over the place, causing trouble and chaos, and power lines up on the top, and you know, a lot of challenges and struggles. You know, people just trying to do whatever they can to get enough money for rent to live there, to be able to pay their bills every day. Well, he grew up in this type of environment, and fortunately for him, when he was 13 years old, someone was visiting his area, and he connected with this lady that happened to give him a laptop. And so, of course, no one had a laptop in the slums back then. But he was really excited to get it, and he just dove in. He started learning all about web design, actually. And so he learned online, and he learned how to use Adobe Photoshop and some of the latest tools. And just over the next 5 years, he figured out how to do design for apps and stuff. And he ended up getting a job at Coca-Cola. Because Coca-Cola is all over the world, of course, and so they have offices in Uganda, like most big cities. And he started doing work for them. And so he got a job, he moved out of the slums, he got an apartment just a few miles down the road. But as he was working there, you know, he really had a big heart and a compassion for his family and friends back in the slums. And so after a year, he was just like, well, I just can't do this anymore. And so he decided to quit and go back to the slums and start teaching his friends how to do design work. And so he started teaching them. He started teaching them so many amazing things. And it was really cool. He moved back to the slums. And, just had a real big heart for his friends. And so he started teaching them how to do design work as well. And he did contract work for Coca-Cola. And then he ended up doing other jobs as well. And so he basically started a business and started hiring his friends from the slums. And that was many years ago. But now he's doing very well. And he has a business with 50 people that he's leading. And he started doing training programs, teaching people how to start businesses, how to grow them, how to help them get more skills. And I don't know, just thinking about it just is emotional for me for some reason. So that's the story of Trinity and just his heart for helping others and helping people in this hard situation. He's great. So share that story. It's just an example of what can happen and how we can help people that are in poverty, and more importantly, how they can help themselves, right? And so Obviously, you're out here because you care about people that are in poverty, and you care about helping the poor. But I think it's good to take a step back and just ask ourselves, well, why do we help the poor, right? What's our motivation, and what does God have to say about this, right? I just want to go back and see what God says. So, sorry. I don't know if I'm going to make it through the talk. So yeah, a lot of amazing people around the world. Can I grab some water? So we met Trinity at this conference in Nairobi, Kenya. And, you know, oftentimes when we think about Africa, I don't know what you think of, but often as we think about those slums, right? Because that's what gets publicized on the nonprofits that are trying to raise money, trying to do things. And actually, I just realized I did not pray, so I should probably pray and ask God for strength to get through this. So, Father God, I just thank you so much for your amazing grace, Lord. Thank you that you love us, God. You're so compassionate. You care about each person and all over the world, Lord, that is suffering and hurting. Lord, I just pray that you'd give me words to speak. Lord, I pray you to speak to each person here, Lord. Not my words, but your words instead. So, we just praise you, God. We need you, Lord. Apart from you, we can do nothing, Lord. We just want to encounter you today. Lord, thank you for your spirit. Thank you for your love, brothers. You say this in your name. Amen. So, we're going to cover, we're going to talk about why we want to help the poor. We're going to talk about how to help the poor, how not to help the poor, and even take a step back and really think about what's the end goal, where are we headed, and what's the purpose of helping people. So we're back in Kenya. We made it there. We got on our plane. We drove there. We met 150 people from all over the world, 30 different countries. It's a fabulous, amazing conference. And they had us stay in this incredible hotel in a suburb of Nairobi. And it's this Four Points Sheraton Hotel. 8 stories tall. There's a swimming pool on the roof. They had an amazing all-you-can-eat buffet. That was, like, incredible. Like, every morning we got super excited to enjoy that. And it was a great chance to meet people who are trying to help people in poverty all around. And each day we would often walk to the mall to buy groceries or whatever. And on our journey there, you know, we're walking down the street. There's a lot of potholes all over because the safety standards are not quite the same. So you got to be dodging these. And there's road cars driving by. And we're walking there, and it's, you know, around probably 5 at night or something. And like happens most times when you're going to developing countries, they see you're a foreigner and people just come running to you asking for money, right? They're always begging, they're always just like, you know, food, food, give me food. And this one lady, she was walking with us, she was very persistent. We're walking down the street, you know, and she's just right there. We're like, go for like 3 blocks and she will not leave us. And so as we're walking, I'm trying to talk to her, find out her situation, figure out what she's doing, why she's on the streets, all these things. And find out that she has a child as well, and she just wanted some food for her children. And so we're like, okay, well, we don't want to give people money on the streets, but let's just see if we can give them some food. So we go to the store, buy some food for us, buy a bag of rice and some flour and stuff for her. And then we come back, and walking back down the street, and we see her again. She runs up to us really excited to see if we had anything. And her 4 or 5 friends were with her. And they also have a couple of kids. And so it's this group of women that were living on the street in Nairobi, and we start talking to them and trying to see what they could do for work, or how they could provide for themselves, like all those kind of big questions. And they do like wash clothes for people to try and provide. And we like try to connect them with the church to see if they could get connected. There's this amazing Nairobi Baptist church just down the street from where we're at. So we told them about the church and plugged them in and gave them the food, and they were super thankful and very kind to give it to them, right? But it's hard, right? I mean, there's people suffering all over the world, right? Whether it's living in the slums or whether it's, you know, living on the streets here in Alamosa or in Fort Collins or in Salt Lake City. There's people that are in need. And what does God say about that? Well, he says that if we see people in need, we need to try and help them meet their needs. And oftentimes we think, well, I don't have any money, to support a college student, or I just have a low-end job, or I'm just barely making ends meet myself. So it's sometimes good to put it in perspective, right? So we want to help people here, we also want to help people overseas, too. If you make minimum wage in the United States, federal minimum wage, you make around $14,000 a year, which puts you at the 85th percentile in the world. So that means that you're richer than 85% of the people in the world. And that means there's 7 billion people less wealthy than you are. So when we think about the rich in this world, that is us. And as we traveled the world, we very much saw that. Oftentimes we don't realize the impact America has on the world, but there's people all around the world that are just like dying to get to America, right? Because they just want to get here, get a minimum wage job, and all of a sudden their living standards have bumped up so much higher. And that doesn't really mean much because it's just a number, right? But I think the point is that we can all do something, even if you don't feel like you have any money. Other thing I want to share the good news too, often as we talk about poverty, we forget to look back and see what has been accomplished. So in the last 40 years, what does it go to, 1990, we've dropped from 2 billion people living on less than $2 a day to 660 million people. That jumped back up again with the pandemic. A lot of people went back into extreme poverty. But the good news is we're making progress. Like as a society, as a world, there's less people in poverty than there was. And we saw that as we traveled, right? Like we go to a lot of these cities and we saw huge skyscrapers, huge apartment complexes. Go to Addis in Ethiopia and you can see like the slums, but you see lots of apartment buildings all over. You see like traffic, traffic is one common thing all over the world. And so a lot of the luxuries that we have here are also in those other places too.
Do you know what the different colors in the graph represent?
Oh, I think that's the different regions.
Okay.
My memory is not too good. If you go to pip.worldbank.org, that's where I got that graph from. They had a great article on understanding poverty. So to kind of sum that up, 1 John 3:17 says, if anyone has material possessions and sees his brother or sister in need, but has no pity on them, how can the love of God be in that person? Right? So I trust you're all here, you all want to help the poor. That's why we're talking about this. But I think it's something we need to be reminded of, that God loves everyone. He loves the rich and the poor. And honestly, it's harder for the rich to enter the kingdom of heaven. It's harder for us to enter the kingdom of heaven because we are distracted by all of these entertaining pleasures and things that we have all around us. So I want to dive in and do a little exercise and just go through some fun projects and consider like which of these would you want to fund, right? So we want to help the poor. Here's some ideas of how to do it. So we're just gonna I'm gonna go through the ideas and just kind of talk with the people at your table, two or three people around you, and discuss like which ones do you like, which ones do you not like, and maybe just choose one that you'd want to fund, right? And let's choose one out of the four, right? So try and go through these quick. So one is eyeglasses for America, for Africa, sorry. I need eyeglasses in America too. But there's an organization out there that will collect eyeglasses, get them donated, or find discount ones, go to Africa and do these eye exams and give these eyeglasses away for free for these people in Africa that can't see, right? So now they go from not being able to see, and they can do a lot more because of that. So that's number one, eyeglasses for America. Number two, so here we call them small businesses. There they're called small enterprises, but SMEs. So they're just small businesses, maybe 2 to 10 people. And we want to give them grants, right? So one common theme all around the world is no one has enough money, right? And so when you start a business, you still don't have enough money. And so people want money for their businesses to grow and to scale them, right? So they want to be able to create jobs, they want to help people. And so if we can award prizes to those companies that are growing, maybe that will help them scale and be able to create jobs, right? So that's one. got two. Next one, of course, is the children begging on the street. Literally, there are children sleeping on the streets in a lot of these countries. It's really sad. And oftentimes, parents will actually go and send their kids to beg for food or beg for money because they know the kids will get a better response rate than the parents. So we can go, maybe we could just start an orphanage and help those children on the streets, or we could just give them money when they ask for it from us. And then number four, the play pump. Some of you might have heard about this idea. This is a while ago, but this is a real project. And the idea was to help provide water for villages in Africa, right? So they don't have water, they need water. And so we want to put these pumps in there, but it's of course laborious to pump out the water ourselves and to do all of that work, after you're working in the field all day. So why not just have the kids have fun and just like a merry-go-round, basically. They just have fun spinning on the merry-go-round. It pumps the water out, and then it is able to put it in a water tank, and then that way they can just get water whenever they want, right? So kind of a fun idea, fun way to have the kids entertain themselves as well as the villages get water. So those are four ideas. Let's go and talk about those. So go ahead and I'll pull them back up here on the screen in a second. But talk about it with those amongst your table and choose one of those four ideas, and we'll just kind of vote to see which one you would want to find.
Okay,
let's go ahead. wrap it up, and we'll take a vote. All right, let's go ahead and bring it back together now, and we're gonna see what you guys came up with and see how see which ones people want to choose. So if you're still talking, maybe quiet it down and we'll keep going. Okay, so hopefully that was a good discussion. I love to see the people going back and forth and debating ideas and discussing. So let's just do a raise of hands. You don't all have to be unanimous. So who would vote for this eyeglasses for America? For Africa, sorry. No, just one. You can only vote once. So that's the hard part, right? You don't have infinite resources when you choose one thing. So raise your hand if you want to do eyeglasses for Africa. Okay, we got one. Okay, how about SME grants? Ooh, okay, yeah. Quite a few people. Grants. That's awesome. How about helping the children on the street? Give me the money. Anyone have a big heart for this? Tim, well, you already voted, so you can do it. Yeah. And then what about the play pump? Anyone big advocate of the play pump? All right, great. Awesome, well, this is fun. We'll try to get a discussion discussing that. Somewhat of a trick question. Good intentions don't always lead to good results. Right? We might, especially when we're foreigners, right? We don't live in Africa. And so us coming there and trying to bring a solution often doesn't lead to good results. So it's Eyeglasses for America. There are some organizations that do this. So Africa, even Roadmap, look at that.
You really want to bring eyeglasses.
I think I need to go to an optometrist or something. So, believe it or not, they do have optometrists in Africa too, and they actually do sell eyeglasses in Africa. Africans do. And so, when we go and we just bring a truckload of eyeglasses over and we just start giving those away for free, what happens? We put the optometrist out of business, right? It's like all of a sudden, oh, I can't sell eyeglasses anymore. And oftentimes what happens is people are just desperate for money, so they'll do whatever they can. They're very creative. Oftentimes people are very creative, very ingenuitive, so they'll just get your free eyeglasses and go sell them to someone. Like, and then they didn't make money. I was like, it's a win-win for them. Child begging, of course this is a hard one, right? Honestly, this was one that was super difficult for us. I shared the story about us helping a couple of people in Nairobi, but honestly, there was like hundreds of people, at least over 100 people that came to us through all the different countries all the time asking for money. Most of the time we didn't give them anything, right? But I was really convicted about that too, because it's like, Jesus says, like, give to those who beg of you, right? And so the thing that always came to me was like, well, how do we help someone in the long term, help them really work towards a root cause, like allow them to provide for themselves, but at the same time meet the needs of today, right? And so I don't really know the answer to that one, honestly, of like, how do we help people down the street? We just say no to all of them. It's hard. It's a difficult one. Obviously giving money to people on the streets doesn't solve anything. Same whether you're here or there. You give them $1,000 today, they'll be broke tomorrow and still be asking for money again, most of the time. The play pump is a fascinating story. Long story short, it gained a whole bunch of traction. The person that came up with the idea was a very charismatic person that raised tons of money, literally it was like millions of dollars. They installed these play pumps all over Africa. I don't remember the exact numbers. And they didn't really do any research on them. And so like they go out and they install these things. Well, what happens is a merry-go-round is not fun if it doesn't spin by itself, right? It just is like a pump you have to like push when you're like going around in circles. Right? And so none of the kids enjoyed playing on it. It was just like, this is annoying. And then these poor women had to go and like push it themselves. And then there was no one there to fix the pump when it broke down. So then it just broke and it didn't really solve anything. So that was like millions of dollars raised and like it did not work. And the SME grants, this is very super common all over Africa. There's a lot of governments that give grants, there's a lot of nonprofits that give grants. And it's great, because people are like, oh, we need to create jobs, we need to grow businesses, we need to help people provide for themselves, which is awesome. But some of the challenge, there's a downside of this too. The downside is that all of a sudden, all of these small business owners, and there's millions of them, like in Nigeria alone, like 45% of the population is like a self-employed small business owner type person that would want to apply for one of these grants. And it becomes this thing of like, well, I have no money in my bank account. You have money, you give me money, problem solved, right? It's that they start seeing it as free money. And they start just going from grant to grant to grant to grant, just like making the rounds, and it becomes who can give the best pitch and who can make the best business plan, rather than people that can actually make profitable businesses that are growing and are providing for the community. So there's downsides to all of these challenges. There's some great reading on here, When Helping Hurts. Has anyone read that before? Good, we've got a few, awesome. Definitely recommend that book. He goes into a lot more detail about how to help people without hurting. And there's another book, Dead Aid, which kind of goes like a bigger picture of macroeconomics. Dan Bisi, she's from Africa. She's an economist that kind of looks at this globally and highlights how like the $1 trillion of aid that we've been giving as governmental organizations the last few years, 50 years, has oftentimes is not helping, and it's often hurting more than it is helping, is the case that she argues for. Point being, this is a difficult problem, right? It's not easy. So the question becomes, how do we end poverty, right? How do we actually help people if we want to help the poor? Well, I would make the case that poverty alleviation is really economic development. So we think about it, everyone here, you get money from somewhere, right? So where does your money come from, right? My guess is most of you have a job, right? Or maybe you own a business, or you're self-employed, or you still live under your parents' wing. But most of us, we have a job, right? And it's awesome, right? We go to work, we get paid every 2 weeks, we get a paycheck. This is amazing. And so if we can create jobs for people that need them, then they can sponsor their own kids. They can send their own kids to school. They can build their own water pumps. They can buy their own eyeglasses, right? So how do we help people create jobs? And the good news too is we've made a lot of great progress on this too. Since 1968, the people living in extreme poverty has dropped from like 44% to 8%. So it's like huge growth over this. And there's a huge difference between someone making, you know, $1 a day and someone making $5 a day. Even though it seems like very little to us, it's a night and day difference to them. So this is a picture in Singapore. And yeah, so there's that graph showing the poverty levels dropping. Really cool to see the downward slope. It's awesome. So we have a lot of people working on this, right? So Singapore is a great example of like something that actually worked. If you haven't been there, it is a small island nation. It's in Southeast Asia. They have a small population, like under 10 million or something. But it looks like Manhattan, basically. Right, so that was like a picture of the skyline I just had before. And back in 1965, when they gained their independence, they were kind of more in the developing economy stage, right? They had an income of, I forget the exact numbers, but it was like on the order of like $1,000 per year per person kind of thing. And then in 15 years, they like increased that like 10x. And so, it was amazing. We got to go to the Singapore Museum and learn how they did it, basically. And in the museum, they highlighted how they had key components of it. One, they trained the population, right? So they made the school systems integrated. They used to be all separate based on the class. So it was, the history of Singapore is very interesting, but basically had people from India, people from China all living there, because in 1819, when Thomas Raffles declared a free trade zone for Britain, everyone wanted to start doing trading there, so it became the trading epicenter of the Southeast Asia. And so there are tons of global connections, but they were very disparate. So when the prime minister came in, he was like, oh, we need to get these systems integrated. And so he started mixing the schools for the Malaysians and the Chinese and the Indians and everyone else, and then made English the de facto language. And everyone had to learn their mother tongue as like a second language. And that gave everyone a common identity, common unity, and really helped create a lot of political stability across the small island nation. So that political stability is huge. Education was huge. They helped them gain these upper level skills, right? So oftentimes, you know, we see a lot of these small businesses teaching people to like sew or to like make bracelets or to do things like that, which is very low level skills. But in Singapore, what they do, they were making TVs, they were making like radio stations. This is back in the 60s, right? This is like top of the line stuff back then. And so they're making very high skilled jobs. And what that did is they basically realized they had to import stuff from other countries and then export these amazingly high value things. So what they're doing is they're training their people to produce top of the line, high value, like amazing products that the rest of the world wanted, and then became a banking center as well and a shipping center. And so they did it. Like they basically ended poverty. That's not an amazing housing program. So in, you know, basically 15 years, their GDP grew by 10x, and this is the skyline of Singapore today, or I guess, you know, 3 months ago. And we got to like have drinks with my friend who's like a machine learning engineer on the 57th floor of this amazing hotel, looks over these beautiful gardens, and it's just remarkable. And this is like surrounded by other like developing countries, right? So it's the point being economic development works. Also, we want to recognize like we're not the only ones trying to help create jobs. Every government in the world is trying to create jobs for the people, for the most part. 90% of them are. And they all have organizations trying to bring in foreign direct investment. Danielle and I went to this conference in Abu Dhabi, in the UAE, and there was like thousands of people there from all over the world, 50 plus countries, and they were all there for the purpose of trying to learn how do we get more people to do business in our country, right? And so there's some amazing stories, right, where these companies, large corporations would go and they would set up an office in this other country, and it would create, you know, 100 jobs like overnight, basically, because they go and do this. And we got to learn the differences between the high-income countries and the low-income countries about what makes a difference. So it's really fascinating to see, like, I think as Christians, too, as we think about helping the poor, we need to think, kind of broaden our horizons, too, and think about who are the other people already involved in doing these things, right? Like, almost anywhere you go in the world, there's people already trying to solve this problem. So let's think of how do we partner with them and come alongside them to help them help more people in poverty. Another just cool example, this is in Nigeria. So there's this company called Flutterwave, and this is one of the co-founders of it. He goes by E for short, is Ian Oluwa, and he's a Christian, amazing, awesome person. But he's founded a dev shop called Andela, grew that up, he sold the company, and then he started this company Flutterwave, which is a fintech company, and they basically manage like, you know, bank-to-bank transactions and provide more access to finance for businesses all over Africa. And they grew within like a matter of 4 or 5 years to be a $1 billion company. So they're kind of like the unicorn, right? So it's one of the first unicorns that came out of Nigeria, out of Africa as well. There's other ones like Interswitch and things like that. So point being is we're not talking about like people living in a village or just people living in slums, right? Like, these are people working in high rises, building amazing tech companies, right? And so there's a broad range of wealth like in any country, right? There's rich people and there's poor people. And he now has started this other company called Future Africa, where he's basically training and investing in the next, it's a VC fund to invest in other tech companies, right? So it's just another example of like, I think oftentimes people think about Africa and they're like, oh, microfinance, right? Like, oh, let's give small loans, let's buy goats and chickens to people for people. And that's a good thing to do, and that's helping those small people, but you know, Africa has grown up, right? It's not just small businesses anymore. So we kind of talked about how to solve poverty, right? So there's economic development, big pictures, and I guess another thing just to touch on that is like, it's a complex problem, right? Like I think sometimes it's easy for us as Americans to think, you know, we have money, right? We grew up, I went to college, like, you know, I have a great job, and therefore I should know how to help people that are in poverty. But the reality is the economy is a very complex system that like none of us really know how it works. Like unless you have a PhD in economics or you went and you started like a $1 million business, you probably don't understand the underlying systems that our economy runs on. And so I guess I just say that to highlight that like, one, we all need to bring humility to this problem. And then two, it's complex. It's not easy to build systems where people work together to create value, to create jobs, where people can all flourish and grow together. But I do want to take a step back and ask a quick question. You know, is wealth really the goal? Like, what, when you think about helping the poor, like, why does God want us to help the poor? So does anyone want to just take a stab at that? Like, why do you feel like God, you know, there's a lot of verses in the Bible that talk about helping the poor and standing up for truth and justice. But what are some thoughts? Why do you think God wants us to help the poor?
One of the things that's kind of landed on me recently, because I'm around a lot of people that are very impoverished, is coming back to the whole Maslow's hierarchy of needs, and not to make it too much of a truism that everyone has to exist in that pyramid and escalate that pyramid in the identical same way, because I think you can find meaning and purpose and identity and value even if you're not in a perfect state of, like, you know, material security or whatever. But there's something to that, you know, that it's hard to talk about existential and philosophical issues in life when you're just trying to survive every day. Yeah. So I think at some core level, like, if we're coming back to identity, our identity is to know God and to be in His presence and to be like Him and to be led of the Spirit and to, like, have this kingdom orientation of the world. It's pretty hard to do that when you're consumed with just very, very, like, immediate needs all the time. So, I mean, that, for people to live out their, like, greatest purpose, which isn't self-actualization necessarily, but the dimension of that, which is to be a kingdom world Christian, they got to get out of that cycle of just being.
Okay, yeah, thank you for sharing. What, any other thoughts? Anyone else want to jump in?
I don't think wealth per se is the goal. Like, I don't, as a Christian, I don't think that my help is just to bring someone from poverty to become rich. It's just to see poverty as a need, as someone that's hurting, because it's reality, it's a very terrible way of living. And me as a Christian, I'm using whatever means that I have to help others, and in that way show the love of Christ. So it's like you see someone in need and you have something, you're going to help this other person. You can say that God is one, but actually, where are your words in actually helping this person, right? Mm-hmm. So I think because what happens if we are creating a whole bunch of rich people that don't know Jesus, you know? It's,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so when you ask, like, why does God want us to help the poor, I guess my best guess is, like, because he became poor, because he was poor, and then he just has compassion, and, like, there's just a way that God relates to being poor that's special.
Yeah, good thoughts. It is it's a deep subject, right? It's something that we can dive more into and talk about. But I think maybe just to kind of walk through that a little bit, ask the question, like, well, what is success? Right? It's kind of a funny story of a fisherman, let's say in Mexico. It's a fictitious story. But this guy, he loves fishing, right? And so every day he goes out and he fishes a little bit, and then he catches what he has, he brings it back to his family, feeds them, and he sells some in the market so he can buy a few things here and there, you know. But they live in a little small house with no windows, no plumbing, no nothing, just a dirt floor. One day a Harvard graduate comes, he has an MBA, and he meets this person. He starts talking to him, and he sees how good he is at fishing. And he finds some, like, places to fish that no one else knows about. And he's like, man, you could turn this into a really big business. Like, you could operationalize this, just hire a few more people, start scaling it out, we'll do some marketing, get some distribution channels going, we'll boom, 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 boom. Before you know it, you'll be doing, like, $1 million a year, no problem. You can sit back, retire, and do what you want. And then the fisherman's like, oh, yeah, that's interesting. It's like, well, what would I do then? And the guy's like, well, what would you want to do if you retired and you had all this money? He's like, well, I think I would probably go fishing a little bit in the morning, maybe make some food, make it to my family, maybe sell a little bit in the market. And all of a sudden it hits him, well, that's exactly what his life is like today. And so sometimes I think, we have to recognize that we are products of the culture that we grew up in. And so, as Americans, it's natural to think that making a lot of money is success, right? Raising to the top of the food chain, going and selling a business, or being the top person at your work, making a lot of money. And and we kind of think about what is the good life, right? We think about, like, if you had $100 million, what would you do, right? Oftentimes people think of this list, right? Like, oh, you know, I would just go back, I would go retire on the beach, you know, I'd just go watch movies all day, I'd just spend time with my family, you know, I would, you know, go exercise a lot, or whatever your hobby is, maybe just spend a lot of time doing that, you know. But people want these things, right? They want happiness, fulfillment, relationships, well-being, personal growth, purpose, right? Like, all those things that we often want, right? Well, what does God actually say, right? Like, the verse quoted earlier, you know, what will it profit a man if he gains the whole world and forfeits his soul? What shall a man give in return for his soul? So as we're thinking about helping the poor, you know, our goal is not just to make them wealthy, right? Like, if everyone lived an American lifestyle, but still everyone went, but the same number of people went to hell, we haven't really accomplished anything, right? Like, eternal life is what matters, right? Not this short life here on this earth. And what does Jesus actually say? You know, how does he describe the good life? Well, he says the good life is loving God, loving others, right? Making disciples, rejoicing in the midst of persecution. He's like, hey, when you suffer, rejoice and praise, because you're, you know, counted to be worthy to suffer, you know, and put our treasure in heaven. You know, he says, go sell all your possessions and give to the poor, right? It's like, it's the opposite, right? It's like, we rejoice in our suffering because this life is so short. And so, even as we're thinking about helping the poor, I know for us, it was really easy to go and to see people living in poverty and just assume that they needed the same things that we have, right? It's like, oh, they don't have electricity, right? Like, you know, Ethiopia, like, the internet connection was like 1 megabit per second, right? And I'm like trying to work remotely, and I'm like a laptop and have these Zoom calls, and it's like audio only, and it's terrible. And my first reaction is like, I need to bring like 100 megabit fiber to this place so I can like get these like developers working productively, right? But in reality, right, it's like, we don't actually need those things to like be successful or happy, right? And actually, if you think about it, what did Jesus have, right? Did Jesus have electricity? Did Jesus have internet? Did Jesus have a refrigerator? Like, no. Paul didn't have those things. James didn't have those things. So, like, to live out the full and good life that Jesus promised us, we don't have to have all this luxury that we have in America. You know, we don't have to have air conditioning. So, anyway, so I just share all of that to highlight that we need to be thinking about how are we really helping people. What are we helping them towards? This was an amazing family we met in the Philippines. The wife of one of our friends in Utah. And they were awesome. They were so joyful, so excited. They had a very simple life. Their whole family lived in one little house. And so they were incredible. And it was just a great example of, like, you know, being joyful without needing a whole lot of stuff. And this is just a fun dinner we had with them. So Psalm 133, you know, behold, how good and pleasant it is when brethren dwell together in unity. So the point being is, you know, are we helping others to draw near to God, or are we just trying to help them fulfill their selfish desires? Okay, call to make disciples. So where does discipleship come in? I've taken up all my time talking about the problem and what doesn't work. But now we're going to talk about the exciting stuff, right? Discipleship. So, what is discipleship? And you want to give me a quick answer? What comes to your mind when you think about discipleship? Brian gave a great thoughts on it this morning. Still some stuff. Anyone want to give us a stab at that? What is discipleship?
Sharing the gospel.
Sharing the gospel? Yeah.
It's like enrolling people, like engaging others.
Yeah, engaging with others, spending time with them.
Yeah, learner. Those two.
Yeah, being a student of Jesus. Yeah, exactly.
Sharing life.
Yeah, doing life with each other. That's great. So I think of, you know, teaching people to love God and love others and obey everything He commanded, right? Growing a relationship with God and others. So just a brief story of our time in Nigeria. My wife and I have been working on a business training program in Nigeria. We launched it remotely 2 years ago. and had been working virtually, training people how to start businesses, right? So that was kind of how I came to this. I was like, oh, we need to create jobs, we need to help people grow and launch businesses. So we launched this big online training program, worked with over 150 people in 2021, and this year we were like, we gotta go see them, we meet them in person finally because it's all been remote, and we applied for our visa to go to Nigeria. The first one, we didn't have time to actually make it because we were leaving too soon, and that was a whole story in itself. So we did the visa on arrival. And so we flew from South Africa to Nigeria. We arrive at like 9 o'clock at night, and we're tired, it's a long day, and we go over to the visa on arrival place, and there's this lady there, and she has had a difficult day. She is not happy, and she was like, we like show her our paperwork, and she's like, where's your pre-approval letter? We're like, oh, pre-approval letter, what is that? And so we like, I'm like, well, maybe it's online. So we go online, try and see if we can find it. It's not online. And we don't have any data yet, so I have to like borrow her data just to get on my phone to see if I can log on their website to find the pre-approval letter. It's not there. And then we end up basically sitting there for 3 hours going back and forth with her and like her boss and all these people and like so many broken systems. Like the boss was over here on this side of the room and the other coworker was sitting here at the computer and he was like wanting our payment slip. Because you have to pay for things, and of course, when you're in poverty, when you're in poorer countries, people are all about the money, and so they don't trust anything. So he's like, we need your payment slip. And I'm like, okay, it's on my phone. And he's like, I have the printed out copy here. He's like, no, you have to text it to me. I'm like, text it to you? I don't even have data. How am I going to text it to you? And so then I go over to this computer, talk to the immigration officer, and I'm like, hey, can you pull up our payment slip? And he's like, oh yeah, no problem. He pulls it right up. It's on the computer. And I go, he actually walks over to the guy and tells him it's there, and he's like, oh, I don't believe you, that won't work. And so he's like, you need to text it to me. So I literally go over, take a screenshot of it on the computer and text it to him. And eventually at midnight, we were able to leave. But the catch was, is they took our passports. And so as you know, traveling the world, you want to keep your passport. You don't want anyone to have it. Well, the immigration officers basically said, well, keep your passports until you get your pre-approval letter, and then we'll come back and give you a visa. So here's a little piece of paper with some handwritten notes on it saying, here is your receipt for your visa. So anyways, long story short, we contacted everyone in the immigration office, tried to figure out what we were gonna do. We're scared to death, because we can't even get money at that, which is a whole other story. And we're like afraid we're gonna be deported, or who knows what's gonna happen. And it turns out they wanted a bribe to be able to push our immigration letter through, because that's just the way things are done here. You know, people gotta work on the weekend, we gotta push things through, gotta get this done quickly, so we need to pay a bribe. And so we were like, well, we're not gonna pay any bribes. And so we ended up waiting it out for 5 days. And we just prayed to God and just felt convicted that we weren't gonna pay any bribes. So after 5 days, we were planning to fly out the next day to the next city. We just went back to the airport, we talked to them about it, and we told them the situation, and the first guy is like, where's your pre-approval letter? We're like, we just don't have it. He's like, why are you back here if you're not a pre-approval letter? And so then we ended up, we told them the situation, told them the bribe, and this was a picture of the sign we saw at the airport going to the immigration office, saying like, do not accept a bribe, that is corruption. So the point being with all of that, we eventually got our visa. After 3 hours later, God provided, and we got to stay in the country and see our people. It was tough. So the point being with that is, there's a lot of broken systems, right? God calls us to stand up for justice, right? Isaiah 58, 2-3 says, for day after day they seek me out. They seem eager to know my ways, as if they were a nation that does what is right and has not forsaken the commands of its God. They ask me for just decisions and seem eager for God to come near them. Why have they fasted? And you have not seen it. You say, why have we fasted and have not seen it? Why have we humbled ourselves and you have not noticed? Yet on that day of your fasting, as you do as you please and you exploit all of your workers. Is this not the kind of fasting I have chosen, to loose the chains of injustice, to untie the cords of the yoke, to set the oppressed free, and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your food with the hungry, and to provide the poor wanderer a shelter? When you see the naked, to clothe them, and to turn away from the food, and not to turn away from your own flesh and blood. So you see, God calls us to justice, right? And just like us, the people in Africa and Nigeria and Ethiopia and everywhere else are products of the culture they grew up in. And the immigration officer I was talking with on the phone, I asked her directly, is this a bribe? She's like, no, it's not a bribe. It's just the way we do things here. And so it's just part of the cultural habits that they have to be paying out these things, because that's just how you get things done. There's no VIP line, so if I just pay someone a little extra, they'll get it moved to the front of the line. So it seems totally fair. That's just the way we get things done here. So the point being with all of this is, how can we help people grow closer to Christ, right? And how do we help reveal some of these things that are sinful, that God doesn't want, and stand up for truth and justice? So point being is, this takes time, right? Discipleship takes time, you know? It's not a one-week mission trip somewhere in and out, you know? It's building relationships with people over time, over a long distance. It's having these conversations. It's being able to help people to see the water that they're swimming in. And so when it comes to discipleship and alleviating poverty, what does the Bible teach us about character, right? Like, what are the character qualities God wants us to grow in, right? He wants us to be people of integrity, wants us to be hardworking, right? To work with excellence under the Lord. Be giving a sermon on that right after this one. And putting others first, being servant-hearted, right? Being humble, learning, continuing to grow, being a person of self-control. And amazingly enough, these are all great things for business, right? It's like, when we do these things at work, when we do these things in our community, then all of a sudden trust is increased, crime goes down, like people are able to serve those around them, systems get better, and things just work better, and then value is created, jobs are created, more businesses can start. Right now, it's like so hard to start a business. You have to like go and like pay off like three or four people in the office just to get your business application through until they finally get it approved like 6 months later, right? And imagine doing that for every single time you want to like hire an employee, or you need to like turn the electricity back on because it went out, you know, for the past 3 hours and all your food just spoiled, or trying to buy something. Like, it's hard when systems just don't work. And so by working with excellence and teaching people to honor God in all that they do, and even, I think especially revealing these sinful things, that is what's going to change societies. And here's a quick story of an awesome man. So on the left, David Ogundeko, he's one of our friends in South Africa, in Cape Town. He's from Nigeria, but he started this organization called FUNEMA. And FUNEMA means the future is now, or actually I forget what it stands for, but it's something like that. And he's basically helping train venture builders. So his whole passion is helping to train people to start businesses and to grow them and to scale them. And he's doing it very well. He's trained like a dozen, like 12 or 15 people already. And like we went and visited a couple of his companies in Nigeria. One of them, they're building a bookkeeping app, and it's helping people bring online, keep track of their finances, and they have over 100,000 users. And so they're growing super fast, and it's really cool to see. And his whole heart is just to empower this generation of entrepreneurs to live out these kingdom principles, right? To help influence the society around them to say no to bribery, to you know, say yes to helping other people, to being a positive light in the community, and changing the society around them. So he's doing it one life at a time, right? Just thinking about discipleship, you know, it's one life at a time. It's spilling those relationships with people, and just a cool, exciting example. So we'll wrap up here. Hopefully you're all ready to take action. This is the next step. Why should I have more time for this? So this is an organization that we started, and we need a lot of help, so we're always welcome help. But our vision for Startup Guy is we're trying to empowering impact entrepreneurs to launch growth-oriented businesses through education, mentorship, and funding so they can create jobs and make disciples of Christ. So that's a mouthful, but this is a group of the people we saw in Nigeria hanging out with that are doing different businesses there. And it's really in the beginnings. Like we've hired a few people in Nigeria, and we're trying to figure out the funding model and all this stuff, and there's a whole big vision there I could tell you about. But if anyone wants to learn more, I would love to chat with you about it and tell you about how you can get plugged in. Gardeners for Africa, this is one of the organizations we've been working with and trying to help them figure out how to become profitable. But they're doing really great things. So they bought computers for this really low-income school called Zion Academy. They only have like books on those shelves, like it's super low-income. And they're trying to teach the kids how to code, right, and how to use computers. And so, you know, they're trying to teach a whole another generation these high-level skills so that they can use and market themselves and to be able to earn new wages. And also they're trying to influence the next generation, right? So they're trying to pour in and help these children learn how to think bigger, you know, how to have hope and how to transform society and not just give in to the same negative culture that is rampant around them. So if you want to help out, or you want to learn more, or just want to give me some feedback, I'd love it. So if you go to the bit.ly/poverty-alleviation, I have a little form there. Feel free to pull it up now on your phone if you're interested. But these are just ways you can help out. So volunteer. Honestly, we're just trying to figure things out, and I'm trying to run my business. I'm trying to get a business off the ground as well for here and need more help to just get things going. So if you want to help out, that'd be awesome. Also, we're trying to connect with other business owners that can provide mentorship, right, that can help some of these growing entrepreneurs grow and scale their businesses. So if you know business owners that might be interested in doing this, that have a heart for discipleship, we'd love to connect with them. I want to start like a prayer team, so I put that on the link. We just need more people to be praying and spreading the word. That's my email on the bottom. I'd love to chat with you. And this is just one thing that we're doing. There's a lot of great organizations around there. Synapis is another one. They're in like 8 different countries. So that conference we went to in Kenya was filled with over 30 different organizations from all over the world doing the same thing, right? Whether it's in Mozambique or in Egypt or in South Africa or Mongolia. And so, anyways, hope you're here. And then, of course, the last thing I want to say is all of this kind of applies to where you are today as well, right? Thinking about how can you be building relationships with someone that maybe doesn't make as much money as you or that is suffering or is challenging. So with that, we'll go ahead and wrap it up. Thanks so much, everyone, for coming. I really appreciate it.